From New Orleans, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. As a child, Wendell Brunius picked up the trumpet because his parents kept trumpets in the house.
It's kind of like when Henry Ford said, give them any color they want, as long as it's black. You know what I mean? You can play any instrument you want, as long as it's trumpet.
Brunius's dad taught him how to keep the family tradition alive.
My daddy used to say this. He was a Juilliard graduate.
Yeah, John Brunius, Sr.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he would say this. If you yell, someone may hear you. But if you whisper, they'll probably listen.
Wendell Brunius whispers after the break. Wendell Brunius reminds us that the call of a trumpet can be gentle and just as irresistible as a whisper in the night. Mr. Brunius has been playing trumpet in New Orleans and around the world for more than 50 years. But then, so did his dad and his brother, and his nephew is on track to do so as well. Each has led the Preservation Hall Jazz Band and helped keep the New Orleans music tradition alive. Wendell is in demand as a band leader and a sideman. He's also a composer and a recording artist, having made 7 albums under his own name and collaborated on many more. He's recorded with Dr. John, singer John Butte, Cubanissimo, and guitarist and banjo player Don Bappy. Wendell Brunius sings and plays flugelhorn and trumpet with understated flair.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you, Wendell Brunius, for being with us. You really, you're really making a dream come true.
Well, thank you. So are you. It's always nice to just serve the public, because that's what we do as musicians.
Yeah.
I mean, we like to think of ourselves in high profile, but we're a kind of service industry.
I don't know. I mean, trumpet players have a particular appeal, and I've always sort of compared them to superheroes. They have special powers, I think, trumpet players.
All
you know
right.
what I mean? To call people to follow them. We follow trumpet players all the time.
Yeah, well, all right. Thank you. I like the way you said that.
That's true.
I guess it started with Buddy Bolden when he used to call his kids home, you know, through the window.
That's right.
I think
right.
that maybe started that whole superhero thing.
I guess it did, yeah. Buddy Bolden on the cornet, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. Now, you know, we talked to Nicholas Payton not long ago, and he said he was drawn to the trumpet because it's a regal instrument. He said that it's an instrument of war. It's an instrument that's associated with the end of days, you know what I mean? But it's also capable of great tenderness. You know what I mean? And when I think about you as a trumpet player, Wendell Brunius, I always think that you bring up the tender side.
You know, I'm like an incurable romantic, really. But one thing I like about the trumpet, the leadership that it takes to play the trumpet, because you're the, I don't care whose name's on the contract, you're the leader of the band.
As the trumpet player.
As the trumpet player, you have to lead. And I like that role, I accept it, and would like to think I do it well.
But it's interesting when one leads softly, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
well, who's that said, my daddy used to say this, he was a Juilliard graduate.
Yeah, John Brunius, Sr.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say this, if you yell, someone may hear you, but if you whisper, they'll probably listen. So he was a pretty wise man.
It's it's interesting because I think that, or I suspect that, I should say, that most musicians, no matter where they start out, you know, they could be the most bombastic trumpet players, you know, but they ultimately end up moving in your direction. Something that you do particularly well, Mr. Brunius, is that you have this poise when you perform. You know, you've got the patience and the emotional depth to feel and convey the mood and the lyrics of the song.
Yeah, and one thing about the words of a song, it'll tell you the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
It'll tell you the mood of the song, you know? Most of the time, I know the lyrics of the song, and that's important. That was important to me. You know, when I was a kid, 1976, Papa French called my daddy for a job, and my daddy was ill. And he said, well, I'll send my son, and who Papa thought was going to be my brother John.
John Brunius Jr., yes.
Who was a great trumpet player. And then I showed up in my best Walmart suit, with my hair all bushy and stuff like that. And Papa was like, oh, man, we thought he was going to send John, you know.
Yeah.
And my self-esteem went to negative zero.
No.
But this was a really wonderful thing that happened for me. Papa French said, I tell you what, you're my band leader tonight. Whatever you call, that's what we're going to play. You call the tunes.
Wow.
He was, in some ways, telling me they could play the songs I knew. But I didn't know all the songs they knew because they had 50 years experience on me, you know?
So do you remember what songs you called that night?
Well, I had played with the Olympia band, so I knew all of those hymns and stuff like that. So we could call By and By and, you know, Lord, 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 and all of these kinds of things. That night after the gig, Papa said, man, you did good, man. He said, look, I want you to learn more tunes. I called Harold Deshaun the next morning. It was my cousin, you know. I said, hey, Duke, you got any books, man, you know?
Oh, sure. He was head of the Olympia Brass Band.
But Duke brought me that book. And I transcribed that whole book into my key by hand. It wasn't no finale and all these programs that are out now, you know. You had to do that by hand. And in doing that, by the time I finished writing the song, I knew most of it. And then I wrote all the words. It's the stuff that got washed away in Katrina, those early days of my career.
Oh, sure.
But that's, you know, so people say, man, you know so many songs and you know the words of so many songs. That's exactly why. I just sing a couple of lines. L, it's for the way you look at me. Oh, it's for the only one I see. And V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore and love. And you know the rest of it.
That's good singing.
If I had to actually write down every song, I knew it'd be around 2,000 songs.
Really?
Yeah, 2,000 melodies. And with Papa French, one of the songs he did was Embraceable You. Well, a cousin of mine, Johnny Fernandez, when I was 15, he brought me this record, Clifford Brown with Strings.
Oh, that's a great one.
And he said, man, make this your summer project. Learn every note on here. And one of those songs was Embraceable You. Thank you. so when Papa French sang that, man, I was like, I know this song. Woo! That, you know, that was the beginning of my really becoming a trumpet player.
Absolutely. Tell us about the mute, which not all trumpet players like to play with, but you play with quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, you are quashing sound that's coming out of your instrument.
Of course. Well, in the early days, Miles Davis played that mute.
Yes.
And he could really speak with the mute. So one of the tunes he did, but not for me, it's an old George Gershwin
song. It's a gorgeous song.
Oh, man. But
they're writing songs
I'm gonna play
of
a little
love,
bit of
but
it,
not for
like
me.
Like Miles played.
Okay.
You know, and he could make those kinds of statements with the mute, understated, but still with some of the funkiest and baddest stuff you ever heard. John used to imitate that, so just being around him when he was practicing, I gave me an up on using the mute.
Now, I think it wasn't it King Oliver who started playing with mute?
Yeah.
I think it may have been.
And you know, Doc Cheatham had King Oliver's mute. That little light bulb mute.
Yeah.
Doc Cheatham had it, so I at least got to touch it.
Really?
I asked him to will it to me. He didn't. But... I didn't wash my hand for a while.
Well, you really are on the continuum, though. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's amazing, though. And so the different kinds of mute, you can use your hand.
Of course.
Right? And then you can use other things. Which kind did
this
you choose?
This is a Harmon mute.
Yeah. It looks like a brass apple.
Yeah. It's kind of like a brass apple. And,
okay, something's coming out of your bag here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You put this, it's got a little stem that fits in there that gives another kind of effect.
Oh, okay.
You know, many years ago, I worked at the 500 Club.
At the 500 Club on Bourbon Street.
And one of the ladies used to do an act where she wanted the song Alley Cat.
Okay.
So I used to play it with this little stem in there. You know, so just to make it kind of catty sounding, that was just an effect. All of these things are just effects.
They are, but that's pretty neat. It's kind of like a funnel with a cup at the broad end.
So if you
of
run
it.
Out of oil in your car, you know.
Yeah, you can use it. Yeah.
Almost use this.
Put some oil in it.
Anyway, we just played the best Alley Cat ever set, six sets per night. Didn't get sick of it, just tried to play it better.
Right. Okay, well, I want to talk to you a little bit about growing up, you know, here in New Orleans, okay? You've said before, and it's true, clearly, that you come from a family of trumpet players. You know, your father was John Pickett Brunius Sr., and he played with the Onward Brass Band, the Tuxedo Brass Band, is that right?
Yep.
And he also arranged for Billy Eckstine and Cab Calloway.
Right. And J. McShane also.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then your brother, John Brunius Jr., he played, and just like your father, he also led the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Yep.
And you led the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Yep.
And your nephew, Mark Bro, led the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Must be something in the water.
So why do you suppose all of you were drawn to the same instrument?
Well, first thing, it was in the house. We had eight children.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a whole lot of money. So who's going to buy a saxophone? Who's going to buy a clarinet? We had trumpets. So it's kind of like when Henry Ford said, give them any color they want, as long as it's black. You know what I mean? You can play any instrument you want, as long as it's trumpet.
True.
So we all played the piano a little bit, and we all played the trumpet. Even all my sisters, they played piano or trumpet or both.
Yeah. And so where did you grow up in town?
Oh, in the 7th Ward, on Tonti Street, Tonti between Allen Street.
Otherwise known as Creole Land.
Oh, yeah, that's Creole Land.
Where that's all it. The Creoles used
that's
to live.
Where we
not all of them,
lived
but
there.
So many, yeah.
Right near St. Augustine School.
Yeah.
You know, right there.
And how many sisters did you have?
Four sisters.
So
we had 8 trumpet players.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So you have 2 other...
And my brother, Burnell.
Oh, that's right.
He played, and he also played bass drum.
Mm-hmm.
And I have another brother who plays a little trumpet, and he plays snare drum and bass drum also. His name is Wayne.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about, like, what it was like to be in your household. 8 kids is a lot of kids, you know?
Oh, boy.
And so what is that... What did your household sound like?
Noisy. Especially on Sundays. And my dad had written a lot of music, written songs like Bagatelle, and so we used to try to sing words to it, make up words. I used to live on Bagatelle Street, but that's where all the hippies meet. Bagatelle was the name of Annette Street, which was at the corner of our house. An old guy named Mr. Marchand, he told my dad that that used to be named Bagatelle Street long time ago before neighborhoods were developed and stuff like that. So that's why my daddy named that song Bagatelle after the street that once was.
And so are there any recordings that feature everyone?
No, just that one little record I did with my daddy when I was singing when I was 9.
I've been sold down that old Green River on a good ship, rock and ride. But we floated too far, we got stuck on a bar. I was left all alone, wishing that I was home. The ship got wrecked with the captain and crew. There's nothing left for me to do. I had to stay and drink that whole Green River dry to get back home to you.
And so let me ask you this. I mean, given the fact that, you know, trumpet being the dominant instrument of the Brunius clan,
yep,
what can you tell about a person, a player, by the way that person plays? So, for instance, you... Your brother, John Jr., and your father, John Sr., Pickett, how would we be able to distinguish one from another? How do you distinguish one from another in terms of your tone?
Well, first thing, our sounds were different. My daddy came from that big band era and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Juilliard and had that all that education behind him. My daddy recorded Just a Little While to Stay Here. So if you look up that record, you're going to hear that quote. My brother John came up more in the bebop era.
Okay.
More like a Dizzy Gillespie approach to his thing. I mean, John wrote this song he called Whole Tone Blues, and it was like, I'll play that song, and you can hear how it's a different era than my daddy.
Okay.
It's pushing the envelope a bit.
Yeah,
you know?
He's building. He's building, but in a very, you know what I mean, kind of structured, non-swinging way.
Yeah, it's not. That's it. And so that was the difference in their playing.
Okay. And then you, a song that's your signature. What would you? How
all right.
Do you sound?
So, you know, like by the time I came, I'm more self-taught. But I started studying the piano with the great Roger Dickerson.
Oh.
And the first lesson he showed me how to hit a minor 9 chord to a 13th. It's foreign language to a lot of people. But I was so inspired by those sounds that I went home and I wrote this tune for my children. I called the Duties. I used to call them Duties. D-O-O-T-I, not D-U-T-Y. Anyway, the Duties. Beep. So, you know, you can hear I'm different from my brother.
Yeah.
Even though I'm inspired by him.
Right.
And even though I'm inspired by my dad, I'm very different from that. So it's just, you have to make your statement.
That's Squeeze Me with Sammy Rimington on clarinet and our guest Wendell Brunius on trumpet. Coming up, spitballs and strippers and Sears. Oh my, stay tuned. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with trumpet player Wendell Brunius. Lives can change in an instant. And for Wendell's father, John Pickett Brunius, life changed in 1941 at the State Theater in Hartford, Connecticut. Not everyone agrees on exactly what happened that night, but no one disagrees on what happened next.
The Cab Calloway Band, Cab was a pretty serious man, you know.
Like no-nonsense.
Oh, yeah, he was a no-nonsense guy. And, like, in those early days, man, people had to be on good behavior, you know. And Dizzy Gillespie was playing trumpet in the band. And Diz shot a spitball, and it ended up on Cab Calloway's face. Well...
You mean Dizzy Gillespie?
Dizzy Gillespie, the great Dizzy Gillespie. They called him Dizzy for a reason, you know.
On stage.
Yeah. And boy, Cab Calloway didn't like that. It fired him and didn't know who to hire. Well, Danny Barker was in the band.
Ah.
And Danny Barker was, oh, no, I got a great trumpet player from New Orleans, you know, who just got out of Juilliard. And he'll come do this job. My daddy got that job as Dizzy Gillespie. And, you know, as I... met Diz later on in the years. Diz was like, man, I went on to be famous. I'm glad your pa took that job. Anyway, every time they would come to New Orleans, he and Lorraine would come to our house and have red beans and rice, and he liked to go to Dickie Chase also.
Diz Gillespie. Sure.
So my mom and my dad, they'd go meet Dickie Chase, you know.
That's a great New Orleans restaurant.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and indeed.
My daddy... when he came home from that, Dickie Chase had a big band.
It, you know? Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Leah Chase's, you know,
yeah, she
husband
was singing. Yeah,
had,
yeah.
Had a wonderful band, yes.
And my dad kind of took him under his wing, and that's the way we did in those days. Nobody had real money or anything like that, but we passed on knowledge.
Right.
You know, and man, there were some great guys in that band. Vernell Fonye played the drums.
Oh, who went on to play with Ahmad Jamal.
Ahmad Jamal, exactly.
He's on Poinciana.
Right. Yes, he is. So when you hear that boom, 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 second line.
It totally is
second line. Yeah. People were like, man, that's some bad stuff. Yeah, stuff. Baby Dodds and, you know, people were doing way, 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 way back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just second line.
My gosh, and he was in
the Dickie Chase band.
The Dickie Chase band.
Benny Powell also, the great trombone player.
Mm.
He played trombone in that band. Dickie himself was a good little trumpet player.
Right.
But Herman Gagne, Tony Moret, Teddy Riley was in that
Teddy
band.
Teddy Riley, the trumpet player? Oh,
Big
my
Emory Thompson.
Yeah.
Warren Bell, Clarence Ford. Sterling White, a great guy nobody ever heard of. Gaspard.
What did Sterling White play?
Played baritone sax.
But your dad, I mean, how long was he with Cab Calloway?
I'm not exactly sure, to tell you the truth, but...
But But didn't he arrange Minnie the Moocher?
Yeah, yeah, he did that arrangement.
But that wasn't that Cab Calloway's biggest hit?
Oh, yeah.
Folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red hot hoochie coocher. She was the roughest, toughest frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. A hide, a hide, a hide, a hide.
Hide, 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 hide.
It was a steal off of St. James Infirmary. You think I went down to St. James Infirmary. Okay, here's the story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red hot hoochie coochie. You know, and it's number St. James Infirmary.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? So a lot of times, I'll play my dad's arrangement and then go into St. James Infirmary, you know, just to keep him ever present.
Oh, that's amazing. So that spitball, like, you know, was a great comet in the Brunius
family. Oh, yeah, in our whole history. Thing. That's right, in our whole history.
And so there is New Orleans melody and New Orleans rhythm that is going through the entire course of American music.
Of course.
That most people are not even aware of.
Of course. Most rhythm and blues songs, most, is an extension of what was done in New Orleans.
Right, what was done in New Orleans in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up hearing people like Dave Bartholomew.
The wonderful songwriter and producer. He produced, obviously, Fats Domino. But he wrote wonderful songs. Blue
Monday.
He sure
did.
Sunday morning, my head is bare. Oh, it's worth it for the time that I've had. But I've got to get my rest. The money's a man.
He had a song he called Honky Tonk Trumpet. And people don't credit Dave for being the first real funk trumpet player.
Was he?
Dave Bartholomew. I'm going to play a little bit of that honky-tonk trumpet.
Okay.
And you hear where the whole funk thing came from.
Okay.
All right?
I'm ready.
So that's just a few bars of honky-tonk trumpet.
Yeah.
So when you think of when Melvin Lasty recorded the thing from I Know.
That's right. Melvin Lasty, the trumpet player.
Great trumpet player. Mm-hmm. Herlin's uncle.
Herlin Riley's uncle, yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can hear Dave Bartholomew's influence on that.
On that song. I know you don't want me no more.
You don't want me no more. Yeah, Barbara George.
Barbara George.
Yes. Harold Baptiste actually wrote that solo.
Did he?
Harold Baptiste wrote the solo. Uh-huh. And, you know, I was on staff at UNO for a while. Harold told me, he said, man, I just tried to write what I thought Melvin was going to play. And thing is as important to me now, being a New Orleans trumpet player, as important as the Saints Come Marching In, for real.
Is that right?
I mean, the song, the form of it is Just a Closer Walk with Thee.
Wait a minute. Okay, now we have to start. We got to stop and we got to think.
Yeah.
All right. So, wait, you're saying that Melvin Lasty's trumpet playing on Barbara George's song, I Know.
Yeah.
was written by Harold Batiste.
Exactly.
The great producer and right. band leader.
That's
right.
With Sonny and Cher and all that stuff.
Who yeah, produced Sonny and Cher and played with Ellis Marsalis and started a whole record company with them. Yeah.
Right.
That he wrote that.
He wrote it.
And that he took it from what song?
It's the form of it is Just a Closer Walk with Thee.
What in blazes are you saying, Wendell Brunius?
That's how close everything is, you know?
Okay, show
and
us
especially
again.
Especially in New Orleans.
Wait, show us that. Okay.
So you can hear one is inside the other, you know?
Yes.
Because we came out of gospel and blues. That was the lifestyle, the real people of New Orleans. You know, we were just telling the truth.
Sort of people who have known the hardship of life in the deep delta.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know what I mean, in this part of the world where the realities of segregation, the realities of slavery before that, infused the music, the blues.
Yep.
And so once you have gospel and you have blues, and that opens the door to this incredible depth of emotional understanding.
Of course.
And that's feeding R&B and rock and roll, is what you're saying.
The whole feeling
jazz.
Comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I had my class at UNO, I had 40 forms of the blues that I taught from. Because everyone has his or her own blues.
Exactly. And that is irrespective of race. It's irrespective of nationality. It's irrespective of ethnicity.
Exactly
yes,
right.
Everybody
has
their own
form of blues. Because you wake up with a flat tire, man, that's a blues, man.
Yes.
You run out of gas on I-10 in the rain. Oh, my God, that's a blues. And this is why I'm saying, get your blues together, your personal blues. So when I hear you play, it's coming from a place that is personally yours.
Right. You know, it's interesting, the fact that you are a teacher, you know what I mean, as well as a musician. And also just the fact that you were self-taught. To be honest with you, it seems to me that a lot of your education might have come on Bourbon Street.
Yes,
like
a lot of it
from your house, but then also on Bourbon Street.
Yep.
Now, but the story goes, before you got to Bourbon Street, you were working at Sears.
Yes, I was working at Sears. I had played some gigs like with Harold Dejean.
With the Olympia Brass
Band.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was my dad's first cousin. Oh. His mother and my grandfather were sister and brother. And, you know, I'd done cover bands, all them, you know, garage bands, stuff like that. But I was working at Sears because my dad was like, man, go to school, man. Get you an education. And so I did that. I went to college. And when I got out of college, I went to Sears. And I was a little manager in the sporting goods store because I had a little couple of letters behind my name. They thought I knew something. And Hurlin' Riley came in there.
The drummer.
Yes. Hey, Hurlin', what's happening? He said, man, you still play trumpet? I was like, yeah. And he said, because I'm working a gig on Bourbon Street. I've been playing trumpet on the trumpet players off night and playing drums on the drummers off night. And they're both leaving. And I want to play the drums, you know, on the gig. He said, man, why don't you come take an audition tonight? He said, you know, just let the guy hear you play. I said, okay, I'll be there. And I drove down to the French Quarter that night, sat in with them for one set, and the piano player was a guy named Vladimir Vasilyev. He was a Russian
Vladimir
guy.
Vladimir Vasilyev.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was a Russian man. He used to be the musical conductor for Charo. Remember this lady?
Oh,
the
of
Hoochie
course.
Coochie lady?
She was a great guitarist.
She was.
Yeah.
No one cared if she played the guitar.
That's true. She had did a little hoochie coochie.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Vladimir hired me that night. But once I got to that gig and knew I could make a living doing that, oh, my God. It didn't take me 10 minutes to make that decision, you know. Hurling started playing the drums. And Vladimir, by having this experience with the Hoochie Coochie lady.
Charo.
Mm-hmm. He had a Latin jazz band. And we had Latin jazz charts. He had done 2 records. You know, because some of the girls didn't want the striptease music so much. They wanted
so
a little more exciting music. So Vladimir said, well, I'll bring some charts, you know. That was a great experience and a change in my life. That was like, wow. I never went back to Sears.
Wow.
So they still have a check from me for, you know, $108 somewhere.
It ain't what you do is the way that you do it. Ain't what you do is the way that you do it. Ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. That's what gets results.
That's John Eubanks, Clint Strong, Mark Brooks, and our guest, Wendell Brunius, on trumpet and vocals with Tain't What You Do. Coming up, Miles Davis never sounded so good. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Wendell Brunius is a New Orleans trumpet player, but he spent years away from the city with the Lionel Hampton Orchestra, at Disney World, and in Northern California. But New Orleans came calling, literally, from a stage at Stanford University.
You know, I was just sitting out on the grass. Percy Humphrey saw me.
The trumpet player.
Yeah. He pointed at me. Come here. I was almost in tears, man, because it was just people I knew growing up. The great Willie Humphrey.
His brother.
He was my daddy's first music teacher.
Really?
Willie Humphrey, back in 1927.
He played clarinet, right?
Yep.
Willie Humphrey.
Great clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
And Sing Miller.
On piano.
Yeah. The great Narvin Kimball. And
on banjo.
Saeed Frazier. I was like, oh, man. I was just about in tears, man. And Percy gave me his trumpet. Come on, play some trumpet. He said, look, just stay up here. Give me, you know. So after the concert, Alan Jaffe, the guy who owned the Preservation Hall.
Right.
He said, man, you should come back to New Orleans. Man, New Orleans needs you. He said, if you don't have enough work, just play at the hall, or I'll just give you money. Just to get you to New Orleans, man. So it must have been about 2 or 3 months later. I started working with the Preservation Hall, started playing second trumpet to Kid Thomas and Mr. Humphrey, Kid Sheik, and they had a horizon that was way wider than I could ever imagine. Eventually, Kid Thomas died.
Yeah.
I took over that band and started to travel with them.
And so how long were you with Preservation Hall, you know, as the leader of the band?
23 years.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
23 years.
Yep.
So, well, what was your favorite record that you did with Preservation Hall?
We did this video. I think it's just called A Night at Preservation Hall. That version of the Preservation Hall, I think, is the best it ever sounded. I think so.
That's amazing. Who was in the lineup?
Dave Grillier, I think, played clarinet. Frank DeMond, I don't know if you remember him. He was from California.
Did he play trombone?
Yeah, he played trombone.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Joe Lasty, you know, that's Hurlin's cousin.
Right, on drums.
Yeah. And Rick Monet.
On piano.
Mr. Kimball on the banjo, and Benji played bass. And it was a really
Benji.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Penn was on there. That version of the Preservation Hall band, I think that was one of the best concerts that we ever
various ages. I mean, Mr. Kimball, Narvin Kimball.
Yeah, he was in his
80s. Exactly. Must have been in his 80s or so. And all. And there you are, much
and
younger.
And Benji was in his 20s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the kite string broke and down they fell. Instead of going to heaven, they went to slide down. I said, oh, Liza.
And so, would you like to record more?
Yes.
You've done, what, seven
I
albums?
Really would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to record more for documentation rather than for ego trip, you know.
Right.
Ego tripping, yeah. You know, because my style and the style of music that I like and hear, and that's going away. It's just going away.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason. Now, years ago, we had this big tragedy of Katrina, and then I wrote this song. I called it "Won't Somebody Please Tell Me." I'll sing a little bit. What do you do with a broken heart? Tell me, what do you do when you're free? Tell me, what do you do when tears start to fall? Won't somebody please tell me? What do you do when all your hope is gone? Leaving you as blue as could be. Tell me, what do you do? And where do you go? Won't somebody please tell me? How can my poor heart stand it? How can I feel so blue? 'Cause though you took my heart for granted, New Orleans, I'm still missing you. So what do you do when all your hope is gone? Leaving you as blue as could be. Tell me, what do you do? And what do you say? Won't somebody please tell me? So that was written from a really special, special place. Wow. Just to play that song again makes me get all nervous and stuff.
Yeah.
But in spite of that, New Orleans persevered, and a version of New Orleans is still in existence today. Thank God for that, because this is the greatest place in the world.
Yeah.
But I lived in Sweden for 8 years after that.
8 years you lived in Sweden after that.
I toured when I was living in Europe. I toured with Benny Golson, and I did a lot of different gigs all over the place. But I had to be in New Orleans. I just had to. Mm. I just felt a sense of responsibility and obligation to New Orleans to teach our young people what I had been taught.
Okay. Well, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with the great Wendell Brunius, the great trumpeter. I'm going to ask you a hard and fast one, Mr.
Come
Brunius.
On.
What does it feel like to have a heart attack?
Oh, well.
Because your heart attack occurred in 2018.
Right. It hurts.
Where?
It hurts a lot.
How?
I was digging in my garden one day, and then I started feeling funny. It was like, I went inside to lay down a little while. I said, well, I think I'm having a heart attack. We went to University Hospital, and within 1 minute of getting in a wheelchair and pushed through a door, I went into cardiac arrest.
Mm.
And I was out. I don't know exactly what happened after that. And they had put a stent in my heart. And then the next morning, they had to put another one. And
really?
I was awake for that one, so that felt funny. It was like a cold worm going through your whole system.
Mm.
A little later on that night, Kevin Lewis came over there, great trumpet player, and he brought a cornet. And he said, man, play so people know you're back, man. So my sister's sitting at the foot of my bed. This is Mark Bro's mother.
Yes.
I started playing the song Four from Miles Davis.
Oh, boy.
And Kevin put that on YouTube.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well, I'm sure you feel fortunate, but I think the rest of us do as well.
Yeah, I'm glad they have a little second chance.
Yeah.
You know? And it brings on a sense of urgency. Like the old hymn about, do Lord, do remember me.
Yes.
You know, and they say the gospel train is coming. You better get your business right because the train might come for you tonight. That happened to me.
Yeah.
The train came. You know, I was able to survive without getting on it.
That is an amazing story of recovery. But it seems like you're in demand. I mean, everybody wants you on their album or everybody wants you on their gig. You know, I've seen you at jazz fests, you mean, where you've played in multiple bands at the Economy Hall stage or at the tent, you know, in one festival. You will have played three, four times.
Yep.
And then obviously people are asking you to be, you know, look, you got John Butte, you play with Tom Hook, you know, Sammy Rimington, you play with Chris Barber. People seem to know that they don't have to worry when you're on their album.
Oh, yeah.
And when they're on their gig.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, I usually can perform the music pretty well, you know.
That sounds
like
an understatement.
Yeah, well, you know, because the music and the whole art is way bigger than we are. And the minute we start thinking we're above it, if you don't respect the music you're playing, I don't know what to say to you.
And so, you know, what would you like to leave us with?
Just support New Orleans music. Support New Orleans musicians. We need it. We're there just for you guys.
And what song would you like to leave us with?
Mm-hmm. I might do that first song I learned from Lee Morgan, that All the Way. I'll play maybe the second half of it. Just, I don't know. He was just a great trumpet player. Thank you, Lee Morgan, for recording this.
And thank you, Wendell Brunius. You obviously are a great trumpet player, and I'm so grateful that you're able to join us here.
Thank you.
And please come back anytime.
Yep.
Wendell Brunius. Wendell Brunius.
I'm just trying to be helpful. I ain't trying to.
Just trying to be helpful.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, baby.
And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Andrew Wimmer, Justin Armstrong, and Margaret Howes. Special thanks this week go to Kevin Lewis. Music Inside Out was produced in partnership with WWNO. For more information about Wendell Brunius, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Pinkelope Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, Shop Nadine Blake, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax-deductible, thanks to our partnership with National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.